You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking New York Mets with MLB.com Mets beat reporter Anthony Nicomo. You have had a rather eventful spring already. A lot of that is, the most recent of that is unfortunate. How did this kind of come together? Because the Mets, until very recently, were saying, we're not worried, this happens all the time, and then we're not worried, and he is dealing with the same stuff he's always dealt with, is Zach Wheeler's out for the year.
Yeah, I actually went back and counted the night before we learned that Zach Wheeler had torn his UCL and was going to need Tommy John surgery. And the night before, we talked to Terry Collins out in Port Charlotte after a game, and went back and counted, and it was something like 8 or 9 times he said, "I'm not concerned," just in response to various different questions. I'm not concerned. And it really, every indication was that the Mets weren't concerned. Zach Wheeler had gone for a couple MRIs already, one at the end of last season, one over the winter, and those came back clean. There was no signs that the ligament had been damaged. And then all of a sudden he goes for another one last weekend, and the UCL is completely torn. And that's a huge injury, and that's going to knock him out for the entire season. So we're still sort of unraveling how this all came about, what the Mets knew, when they knew it. It's clear at this point that Wheeler's elbow was barking, way back last summer. The Mets knew about it at the time. Their training staff, their doctors said he was fine to pitch through it. And so he did. And how much that played into what happens now, when it happens, nobody knows. And that's sort of the issue, not just with the Mets, but all around baseball. With all these Tommy John injuries that are coming up, there is no science behind it. No one has the magic formula where if you throw X number of pitches at Y velocity, at Z age, whatever it might be, no one knows. No one knows what the primary, secondary, tertiary contributing factors are. So these teams are all just guessing. And, you might want to say the Mets guessed wrong, I guess, with Wheeler and what that elbow could endure.
I want to stick a pin in that because I do want to come back to that in just a sec. But the thing that strikes me is, so the ligament looked clean at some point previously. Is that your understanding, that at some point prior to this week, they actually looked at the ligament and it looked clean, or they just didn't look at the ligament, they looked at other stuff?
Well, if you go back on the timeline, Zach Wheeler had his first MRI on the elbow, as far as we're concerned, was his first MRI back in September. The elbow was barking a little bit, so the Mets sent him in for a test. He was pitching really well at the time, and it came back, and it showed, from what I understand, what an MRI would show for any pitcher. Just there's a little noise in there, but the ligament is intact, and nothing to be worried about. Now, whatever pain, discomfort Wheeler was feeling didn't necessarily go away over the offseason when he was doing his normal progression to get ready for spring training. It started barking again. So he told the Mets, they flew him to New York, he had another MRI, and it showed the same thing. I think Terry Collins' words were, it was, quote, clean as heck, which, again, any pitcher is going to have a little noise in there, so you have to take that with a grain of salt. But as far as the ulnar collateral ligament, the UCL, which is the injury, which is the ligament that when it tears, you need Tommy John surgery. As far as that goes, it was still intact. At least that's what the Mets are saying. And then all of a sudden, Wheeler's elbow starts barking again this spring. He goes back into the MRI tube. He comes out, and it's a complete tear. So when the ligament actually tore, I don't know. I don't think the Mets really know. I don't think Zach Wheeler knows. I don't think it happened necessarily on one pitch. But I think it's pretty clear at this point that there was no tear in January, and there is a tear now in March. And, how that happened again is sort of anyone's guess.
So to go back, and obviously if that's in fact what happened and that something just went horribly wrong within the last 2 months, that's a different matter entirely. But the one thing I would ask about, because, I do agree sort of broadly that we don't really know, but – you know, it seems like the one thing we do know about arm injuries and elbow injuries is if you pitch when fatigued, it massively increases the risk. And whether there's a specific number, whether it's 90 or 100 or 120, is not really known and maybe beside the point. But if you pitch when tired, that's really when it happens, when fatigued. And And so the thing I wonder about with Wheeler is not even necessarily the high counts, but the high counts and the low number of innings, the 100 pitches in five innings, 110 and six, whatever they were. Is that something that, I mean, again, the Mets say they're fine with how they handled him, but is that specific thing something that maybe they revisit, not the total counts, but these high intensity, lot of pitches in a short time outings that the Wheeler in particular had?
Right, the high-stress innings, which is what he's become known for in his career. He does throw a lot of pitches. He throws a lot of balls outside the strike zone, so his pitch counts in general tend to be higher than the other pitches. And I think there is probably something to that. I think there's probably something to the fact that he's one of the hardest-throwing starting pitchers in baseball last season. I think that plays a role in why we're seeing so many more of these injuries in general, just because guys are throwing harder than they used to, and the human elbow is not necessarily equipped to handle that. But yeah, I think the fatigue factor definitely plays a role. It was Zach Wheeler's first full big league season on top of that. And then you go and you look at his September pitch counts. I believe he was 114 pitches his first September start, and over 100, I believe, in four of the five. And yeah, you combine that with the fact that many of those were, it's not like he was going eight innings and 114 pitches. It was almost always less than that, and really abbreviated start. So there is something to that. How much? I honestly don't know. How much does the velocity matter? I honestly don't know. And I'm certainly not alone, you know, in baseball circles, because like I said originally, no one knows. I think you can look at it logically and determine what the risk factors are. Age being one, velocity being one, fatigue being one, but weighing them against each other is just really, really hard to do at this point.
So to move forward and to actually talk some baseball, it appears as though Dylan G is the guy. He's very much plug and play. It's the sort of path of least resistance. Is that clear to you that at least for now, Dylan G slots into that position in the rotation and just kind of everybody else moves one step closer to being the next man up?
Yeah, Dylan G is the guy, and that's a great way to put it. It is kind of the path of least resistance. You know, if the Mets had their way, they still would have traded Dylan G this winter. It turns out they're pretty fortunate that they didn't. But there are other candidates, not to step in right now, because G is going to be the guy. But you've got Rafael Montero, who the Mets still like as a starter. He'll probably open the year in the bullpen. And if G struggles, and he's already on the roster, I mean, I could see a quick switch with that. And then, you know, the two names that keep popping up from the minor leagues are Noah Syndergaard and Steven Matz, both the really legit blue-chip prospects, Syndergaard being closer to the big leagues. But he had his struggles last year at AAA. If he can go out and really show in April that he's learned something, that he is ready to stop being a thrower and be more of a pitcher, which has been his problem coming up. You know, these guys are all on the cusp, but I wouldn't say Dylan G has a safe job now by any point. He'll get a few starts in April. The Mets respect him. You know, he's well-liked in the clubhouse, and I think that does actually play a role into this. And, you know, they respect his body of work over the past 4 or 5 years. But, you know, if he's not doing well over those first three, four, however many starts it may be, you could easily see a Montero or a Syndergaard jump in sooner rather than later.
I realize this would be basically a good problem to have, but say G is just fine. He's not so bad that he pitches his way out of the rotation, but he's not great, and Syndergaard goes down and puts it together. Is that a problematic scenario where in a month or 6 weeks or whatever, Syndergaard is ready and they can't really tell G you're bumped? Or are they willing to say if the time comes and it's clear that the alternative is better than G, even if G's not struggling, will they be willing to pull that trigger to do the best thing for what they hope will be a contender?
Yeah, I mean, that would be a great problem for the Mets to have. It's a trigger they would probably be willing to pull. You know, if that were the case and G was pitching fine, I think then those Super 2 concerns creep in and the Mets will say, well, you know, G's pitching fine, so let's just leave him in there until late May, early June, whatever it may be, so we, you know, retain all of our leverage on Noah Syndergaard or Steven Matz, for that matter, if it happens to be him who's dominating at AAA. But, yeah, again, it goes back to, you know, just looking at this year from a much broader perspective, the Mets are in it to win it this year. They're in it to make the playoffs. Just because Zach Wheeler goes down, that doesn't change, nor should it, because this was their number one area of depth. It was their number one strength, and they have all these guys that we're talking about now who are potential fill-ins who while they might not be able to put up the numbers that Zach Wheeler put up, you can draw from that pool of depth and say, this doesn't hurt us nearly as much as it would hurt some other teams. So with all that in mind and that mentality in mind, if they think Noah Syndergaard come May 15th is a better option to win games than Dylan Gee, I don't think they'd hesitate to pull that trigger. And the other factor is you've got, one starting pitcher, Matt Harvey, who's coming off surgery himself, and they're going to be careful with him. You've got another starting pitcher in Bartolo Colon, who Sandy Ellison referred to as 60 the other day, which isn't that far off. So you don't know what's going to happen with him health-wise. You've got another starting pitcher, John Neese, who's had all sorts of elbow and shoulder problems, and it as good a bet as just about anyone in baseball to miss some time over the course of the season. So odds are they're not going to have that problem. Odds are someone's going to go down at some point, even if it's just for a couple of weeks. So, and then, if Syndergaard's the guy at that time, he could come up and stick. So it is a little far-fetched, in my opinion, to think that way. But if Syndergaard is the best guy at the time, I think we'll go with him.
As a very wise manager I covered for a long time said, don't worry about it. Those problems tend to sort themselves out. Thanks for taking some time to chat here on MLB.com Extras, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is now available. Watch over 250 spring training games and every regular season game live or on demand in true HD. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription, allowing you to watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices, every night on every device. Visit MLB.tv for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply.